All right. Welcome, everybody. Once again, my name is Toby, and I'm an alcoholic. This meeting is a speaker meeting, and I'm delighted to introduce tonight's speaker. This will be his second time speaking here at the 164 Group Speaks, but I can never get tired of hearing his story and the message that he carries. This gentleman, and I do know him as a gentleman, was a man I met early in my sobriety, along with another friend who invited me to a small meeting. And what he shared in that meeting and his whole approach to the 12 steps so aligned with my approach and my beliefs, as well as my friend's belief, that we decided that we had to grow, spread the message. And we started a small little group in his trailer, consisting of the three of us, a couple others, and our sponsees, maybe no more than eight people. And that little fellowship and friendship and love that we had for one another grew into a meeting that went beyond our wildest dreams to the size and the message that it carries. And that group was the 164 group. He's always been a friend. We've had some times apart, but every time we see each other, it's like just seeing him the day before. And I've been blessed to be able to see a lot more of him recently. And I invite you all to listen to his message. And I guarantee you, you won't help but hear what he has to say. And the time will go like this. With that, in order to give him enough time to tell his story, I now introduce you my good friend, Eric Monk.
Yay. My name is Eric Monk, and I am a recovered alcoholic. My sobriety birth date is March 23rd, 2004, and I am grateful to be here tonight for my second time, and as I understand it, I'm the first. Not that that's any feat or by any means having to do with my story or how I tell it. George, you may be taking those out again in a minute. I do tend to get passionate about this thing. This program saved my life. The book talks about the alcoholic being pulled back from the gates of hell and death. I was that alcoholic. And I will get into that in a minute. I always start my talks with a promise that's on page 13, and it was the promise that Ebby gave to Bill at his table before he went into the hospital. It's on the bottom of page 13. It said, "My friend promised when these things were done that I would enter upon a new relationship with my Creator, that I would have the elements of a way of living which answered all my problems." And my sponsor, several times in and out of these rooms before I got here, gave me that promise, and I held on to it. It's helped me through many a tough time, and it's one of my favorite promises in the book, because it's the truth. The steps, which is the few simple things that I needed to do to get connected to my Creator, answered all my problems. Not just my problems with homelessness, not just my problems with no job, not just my problems with friends and family, but all of my problems. There's not a problem today that I can't turn over to God, and it won't be taken care of. So with that, let me tell you a little bit about me. I'm not going to drunkalog you tonight. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my story. I'm going to qualify myself to be up here, and then I'm going to move on. I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. My purpose for being up here is to try to pull somebody with a message of hope, not to drunkalog you. if you're alcoholic like me, most of our stories are basically the same of how we drank and did alcohol in all its forms. So if you came here to hear how I drank, I'm going to disappoint you tonight. I really want to tell you what God's done in my life. And that's the direction I get in step three. But again, we'll talk about the steps into what happened. So I was born in 1968. My birthday is actually about a week away, next Friday to be exact, to a dysfunctional mother and father. I was adopted. My mother was 12 when she had me. My father was 30. So you can put those two together and figure out my mother was raped by a friend of the family. My mother's parents were devout Christians. They didn't believe in abortion. Back in 68, there was only three reasons you could have an abortion, and that was interracial conception, rape, and life of the mother. So they flew her from Oklahoma to San Antonio, Texas, where she had me. And my mother and father, the ones that I know as mother and father, adopted me at birth. She kept up with the adoption agency for 5 years after I was born. My mother was a school teacher. My dad was a senior vice president of a bank. And my dad tried to kill me when I was five, literally. I had gotten in the middle of an argument, and he tried to choke me at the table. So that'll kind of describe how dysfunctional my family was. That cycle of abuse continued in my family even after my mother divorced my dad. She was very abusive. I took beatings from my sister, who was also adopted. My mother couldn't have children. My mother was handicapped. She was born without both hip sockets. And so I'm telling you all of this to kind of set up a pattern. I had my first drink about the age of seven. We were in Austin, Texas. It's Thanksgiving. How do I know it was Thanksgiving? Well, the A&M and Texas game was on. There's a TV over in that corner. There's a fireplace right in the middle. Couch along this wall. It's a large living room. There's a bar, well-stocked bar, walk-in bar. You could actually walk in. There was three cabinets along the bottom, two cabinets on this side. And there was a table back on this end about where Toby's sitting. It was a medium-sized wood card table. My uncle was sitting there, my dad was sitting there, my grandfather was sitting there, and they were all drinking Lone Star beer. And I walked up to my grandfather and I grabbed his beer, and he allowed me to take one sip. And my life changed that day. I can't tell you how that sip made me feel, and it probably didn't really do anything to me, but my life changed that day because I felt a part of that table. You see, I was taught at a young age that I was adopted, so I always felt apart from, different, because I wasn't my mom and dad's. I wasn't a part of that family. Why do I describe that scene in that much detail? Because I can't tell you the first time I had steak. And that's my favorite food. But I can tell you where the Yago sat in my grandmother's refrigerator, next to the glass bottle of Sprite when they still had those. I can tell you how much water to put in whiskey before it starts to change taste where other people can tell the difference. I can tell you just how much Southern Comfort to put in a drink to make your mother pass out. And later on I'll tell you how good it made me feel to get drunk the first time. Today I know I was an alcoholic from a very young age. Today I know I was an alcoholic from birth. Because it wasn't the amount that I drank. It wasn't the fact, really, that I drank at all. It's selfishness and self-centeredness. And the way I think, the way I acted, everything about me. Alcohol was but a symptom of my disease. One Christmas when I was probably 9 or 10, I walked into the living room before we had all gone in on Christmas Eve to open our presents. There was a bike and some other stuff sitting out in the middle that weren't wrapped. And I had asked for a BMX bike. This was when BMX bikes were first becoming a big deal. And I was all excited, and I ran to my mom, and I was like, oh, I got my bike. And she's like, nope, that's not for you. And I ruined Christmas for everybody. That's how deep my self-centeredness ran and my selfishness. My first real drunk happened when I was in the 7th grade. We were in Pasadena, Texas. We were living in an apartment. I know it was a funny, it was my first experience with drugs. I didn't use it, but when we moved into the apartment, there was a small pot plant growing out of the planter. I should have known that this was going to be an odd place to move into. But for years, my mother was so hard to live with. I'd been making her drinks for years, and I knew, like I told you, just how much of her brand to put in her drink to make her pass out. And I knew right when she was asleep, because she was a real bad snorer. She was a school teacher, and she drove me and my sister to academic excellence. And she was very hard to live with. I love my mom, and she was really an example for us kids. She was told at a very young age she'd never walk, and she walks today. She had 17 operations by the time she was 19. But I knew just how much liquor to put in her drink, and every time I made her drinks, from the time I was in the 5th grade, I would take just a little bit and put it in a mason jar, which I hid in the back of her cabinet. And that night, I just happened to top it off. And I drank it, the whole mason jar. And within a short time, my world had changed. I didn't have a care in the world. I was a part of that ease and comfort had come. That hole in my gut was filled. And I walked out of my apartment in Pasadena, Texas. And I looked up at the night sky, and the stars were so bright, and there wasn't a question of whether there was a God. That God was in that mason jar. I don't remember much past that, except for I stepped up in this guy's 4x4 and I defecated in the back of it, I remember, because he had an alarm in it, and it scared me all the way back home. And I guess the running, I threw up from the front door to my bedroom. And there were no consequences, because I know it reeked of alcohol. My mom didn't even ask anything about it. She just had me clean it up the next morning when I got up. But the thing I knew the next morning was, I don't care how long it takes, and I don't care when it happens, but I want to do that. I need to do that again. And I did. And my drinking progressed from there. At the age of 17, things had gotten so bad, I got emancipated and I had my mom sign me up into the military. And I'm not going to go into much about that. I'm just going to say that drinking ruined a career. I was in a fire June 20th of 1990. My best friend died in my arms. And we were on our way to the Persian Gulf for Desert Storm. I had already been through Desert Shield. And due to operational readiness, I couldn't go home for some leave. So they sent me to fat boy school. My neck was too small, my waist was too, the measurements didn't add up. So they allowed me to go to CAC level 1 weight fat boy school for 30 days because they could call me right back to the ship. It was in the same port that we were in. The very first night I got drunk and I was late for class. They were going to kick me out that day. But the class voted after they heard my story that I was in this fire. And they voted, said, keep me in. And the chief that was in charge of it told me if I drank one more time, I'd lose my career. So I made it through the 30 days. I lost 15 pounds. And before that, my evals were really, really good. The last night, my warrant officer, who was one of the two lives that I saved, came back and he asked me to take him back down in the space where the fire had happened. And it triggered my... I didn't know what it was then, but I know now that it was the early stages of PTSD. And I can't blame any of this on... I'll get into that in a minute. Anyway, I drank again that night. And I missed graduation, and the Navy kicked me out. So, I go home. I end up homeless within a year and a half. I blew college. My mother and grandmother told me that if I came home, they'd put me through college. I blew college drinking. And, was homeless on and off for the next 20 years. In and out of these rooms, until I ended up in a homeless veterans home in San Antonio, Texas. It was one of my last outings. And I heard the message of a man who today is my sponsor. He will be here in January. I couldn't get honest back then because when I got into the homeless veterans thing, I told him I had 5 years sobriety. He told me, he said, you need to get in the steps. You need to get a sponsor. You need to work with others. That's what's going to keep you sober. You need to get off the fence. is that people that sit on the fence and sit on the periphery of AA do that until the pain gets so bad that they go out and drink again. So I did. I asked his... I had one sponsor, and I manipulated my way through a four-step and came the night to tell him my fifth step. And I said, man, I've been telling you my fifth step for the last 4 weeks. I said, the worst thing on it is that I did this and that. And he said, oh, yeah, you're right. You're done. Let's go to step six and seven. And then I tried to keep up with everybody in the room while dying inside from untreated alcoholism. I did that for a year. Never coming clean about the lie about 5 years. I picked up a 6-year chip. I celebrated it with people. And 3 months later, I went back out. I watched my best friend die. They found him dead in a hotel room. Dead and bloated. Still wouldn't come back in. Short time later, I ended up in Florida. Right over here off of Skipper Road. By this time, I'm at that spot that it talks about in into scare. No, I'm just kidding. In the very last chapter in the 164 pages, a vision for you. Where it talks about that man whistling in the dark and where he... I'm sorry, it's not there. It's in the beginning. It talks about us being at that jumping off point where we can't imagine life with alcohol or without it. Guys, I couldn't go to the store. I couldn't leave my camp that I was living in without having a beer. I couldn't make a decision. Am I going to go to the labor hall to work? Am I going to go panhandle? Am I going to get out of bed and get dressed without taking a drink? My life was that messed up. So within just a couple of weeks, I was coming into my camp, laying on the railroad tracks, going to sleep on the tracks, not next to them, not on the mattress underneath the tarps and stuff that I had built, but on the tracks. And I thought at the time that it was my disease waking me up for another beer, but I know today that it was my higher power. Guys, I was so far gone that I would get up in the morning on the days that I did go to the labor pool to work for that little $48 we were making at the time. I'd get done with work and I said, you know what? I'll hold on to this. I'm just gonna buy me a 6-pack of beer, 2 packs of cigarettes. I'm gonna go back to camp. I'm gonna drink that, go to bed, and go back to the labor pool the next morning. Put that little bit of money together. That'll give me enough for a case of beer, 2 packs of cigarettes, and a motel room so I can get a shower. And I passed this little bar on Nebraska Avenue that had a pretty good happy hour with 2-for-1. And I say, you know what? I can spare $5. I'll just go in for a couple of drinks so I can hear some music and maybe shoot a game of pool. And I get that first drink in me, and it starts that craving. And I wouldn't walk out with any money. I couldn't even stop for a shower. I couldn't stop to save my life. God put a guy in my camp about 3 weeks before I entered treatment. And he kept talking about going to the Salvation Army, and I'm an old railroad tramp. I used to ride the trains. Salvation Army was a place to go get your stuff stolen. But I knew they used to hire people. Going over. And, not on that. Knew they used to hire people, and I said, you know what? Richard, tell him I'm coming over for a job. That's what I need. I need a job. That'll get me sober. Because I've always been able to sober up for a little bit for a job. All right, I'll tell him. After a couple of nights of sleeping on that track and that train wouldn't roll over, I kept thinking back to these man's words about getting in the steps and getting a sponsor and I could get well. Said Rich, the night he went over there once and he blew numbers and they told him it was too high for him to come in. He came back and I said, Richard, tell him I'll be over there tomorrow, day after you come in. I said, all right, Eric, I'll tell him. He got in that next day. I held true. I knew I couldn't blow numbers, so I drank one beer, just enough to keep that. I didn't have outer shakes. I had inner shakes. Whole body on the inside felt like it shook. I did. I showed up that next morning at the time he told me to. I can't remember what time it was. I don't remember if it was 8 or 9 o'clock. I was sitting outside the door. And by God's grace, there wasn't anybody else waiting. And there was a man there by the name of Kent. He came out and met me, and I could have swore he was looking at me with disgust, because I had my backpack and old beat-up work boots and torn-up clothes. I must have smelled like crap. I know I looked like shit, pardon my language. Damn near 300 pounds. Made me blow into the machine. I didn't blow numbers. He did my intake. He said, all I've got is the library floor. And I said, sir, you let me in. I don't care where you put me. I was sleeping right next to Richard. He said, you can go take a shower before you go out to the dock to work. Detoxing. And I took a 20-minute shower. That shower felt like the hand of God. Oh, shit. Pardon me, guys. First thing I thought was, I'm going to fly under the radar. I'm going to get me that guru sponsor. That way I can just say his name and everybody will know him. I'll coast through here, do a little transition, get me a little job. Everything will be cool. God showed up. And that guru sponsor who came in every twice a week, my age. That time he had 5 years recovery. Told me no. I'll help you find a sponsor. That Thursday night, he took me out to his sponsor. His sponsor asked me, he goes, "Do you having a problem with alcohol?" And I don't know where it came from, but I said, "Yes, sir. Drugs, too." He said, "What are you willing to do about it?" And I said, "Sir, if you ask me to dance naked in the middle of Nebraska, I'd do it." And he said, "Good. Because if you told me any fucking thing else, pardon my language, guys, because I think it's disgraceful to do that in front of you, but that's what he said, I'd tell you to hit the bricks." He said, "You got a big book?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Good, start reading it tonight." And we started in the steps. Started in the doctor's opinion, and it started talking about a mental obsession, which taught me my mind was gonna tell me I was okay. Within a week or a month, I was gonna think that I was all right, that I wasn't an alcoholic, that I wasn't gonna remember the pain and suffering of yesterday. And it's been the truth every time. After I have 3 to 7 days, when the alcohol is out of my system, my mind takes over. And all I remember is the good times. Helps me with the girls. Loosens me up at a party. Gives me confidence. Ease and comfort that I see others take with impunity, meaning that they have no consequences. But once I take that first drink, I'm off to the races. I can't stop. That's that physical craving. Because I have an allergy to alcohol. What's an allergy? How many people have friends with allergies to shellfish? What happens to them? Right. We have a reaction to that. Well, I have a reaction to alcohol. I can't stop. How many of you have said, "Okay, I'm going to have just 3 beers because I can't just have one. That doesn't do anything for me." So how many have said we're just going to have one or two or three? Right. And you've ended up having 6 or 7. Right? That you didn't feel that happening. Right? But you went over that target limit that you wanted to have. You wanted to have 2 or 3. You ended up at 7, 10, 12 a case. Right? That's the way it is for me. That's the way it was in the beginning. In the end, I had to have it. And those numbers got higher. And then I started, like the book said, I started to add other things to that. In the beginning, I didn't have a lot of problems with alcohol. My sponsor talks about a target, a bullseye. In the beginning, I could hit that bullseye. It's when, and only occasionally go outside. But it's when I started showing up to my mom's house was a big deal. When I started showing up to my mom's house drunk, without that confidence anymore, that I started seeing that I had a problem. Powerless over alcohol. Then the unmanageability that it's talking about is not the wrecked cars and the wrecked
relationships, the lost jobs, like my career in the Navy. That's external stuff. If the steps are supposed to help me internally deal with this disease, then the unmanageability must be inside. Remember I talked about that hole that I felt? That's the unmanageability. Not knowing who Eric was. That feeling like I didn't belong. Depending on what bar I was in, I was a Navy SEAL. That's the truth, though. He wasn't the only one to use that one. I was a flamboyant gay guy. I was a firefighter. It was whatever you wanted me to be to fit in. That's the unmanageability that it's talking about. First step, I'm powerless and I'm powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. That has to be set home before I can move on. Once that is, I become willing to go on with the rest of the steps. Step two came to believe that there's a power out there that's will return me to sanity. What's the sanity that it's talking about? The insane thought is that I can drink again. What's sanity? That I'm willing to go on with the rest of the steps and then turn my will and life over to the care of God. And that's what I do in the third step. I make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Do I do that one day at a time? I make that decision for the rest of my life. I live my life one day at a time. I make a decision to do this thing for good and for all. And that's what I did. March 23rd, 2004, I picked up my last white chip. Decision for good and for all. Fourth step, I wrote it out. My biggest things were the fact that I was out there doing things same-sexed. For drugs and alcohol. It was the secrets that I was holding on to for so long. The shame and guilt behind them. I didn't know whether I was gay or heterosexual. They hold no power over me today. I can stand here at the podium and talk about them because I know what I am. My fiance is sitting up in Brooksville. I just spent the most wonderful 6 hours over the last 2 days with her. That I realized it was drugs and alcohol that drove me to that. But it's what I had to share first with my sponsor in that fifth step. God allows me to do that. Took the fear right out of it. Poison flew out of my pen as I was writing my fourth step. I work with guys today, I tell them, I'd rather have 10 to 15 things that you're going to go out and drink over. Those things that you've been holding on to that you want to take to the grave. Than have 50 pages of frivolous stuff. Step five, we share that stuff with somebody else. We've got to deflate ego. We've got to learn what humility is. Humility is not a bad word. I don't walk with my head down today. I can look the world in the eye. I'm humbled today. To know that God has brought me out of the ditch. God did this for me. I didn't do it. I walked into it with willingness to do the work. And when I didn't have it, I prayed for it. I
and God gave it to me. God comes evenly to those who seek him. Just because I'm sitting here with 9 years past doesn't mean that God gives me more spirituality than Toby or Scott or George. He comes evenly to us all. Six, I ask for the willingness to turn all this stuff over to him. Seven, I turn it over. Eight, I make a list of people I need to make amends to. Even the ones I don't want to. Because they're not the ones that are going to go out and drink. I am. If I don't make amends to them. Right before my dad died, I made amends to him. He didn't want to hear it. Not my deal. I forgave him. 2 years before he died. Most freeing thing I ever did. That and forgive myself. Step 10, I continue to take personal inventory because I'm not perfect. Anybody in this room that knows me can tell you that. I've stepped away from this program a couple of times. One time for 6 months. Didn't feel good. My higher power and a friend of mine helped me make through it. Step 11, continued in prayer. I pray many times a day, but I start my day in prayer and I end it in prayer. And step 12, the big one for me, is continue to take this thing to others, especially alcoholics. My life is lived in service. I work at the VA and I'm going to talk about that in just a second. I really, really went over. I like to spend a majority of my time in what God has done in my life. I left that treatment center. There was a guy there, and I don't think he'd mind me mentioning his name. His name was Gary Kropp. He works for the VA. And early on, while I was there, he told me, if you make it through here, I can get you a six-month compensated work program at the VA since you're an honorably discharged vet, if you make it through here. My last, I think it was 2 weeks at the treatment center I was in, I searched for jobs and stuff. I had a night desk job, so the first couple hours in the morning before I went to bed, I went out and sought work. And I was an electrician the last couple years of my alcoholism. I must have gone to 15 different electric companies and they wouldn't hire me. And I thought it was because of my conviction. But now I know it was God working in my life. Gary put me on at the VA. There was a hiring freeze. It was one of the longest. We're in the longest now. They were in a two-year hiring freeze. I did my six-month compensated work therapy program. I'm a convicted felon for fraud. I was hired on one of three people during that hiring. When I got out of prison, they told me I'd never work for the government. Didn't have to lie on my resume. I told them all the truth. I was hired on as a housekeeper, and I thought that was the best thing in the world. Thought that's all I'd ever do. A year and 2 months later, I put in an application to be a clerk. Today, I have access to over 3 million veterans. Records, and I could fraud any one of them. never even crossed my mind. If that's not God working in my life, I don't know what is. Big one for me was that 3 year, I got 27 tickets in Texas in my addiction. 12 going one way, 13 coming out the next morning at my dealer's house. Texas took my driver's license. I didn't have it for, I don't know, 13 years. 3 years before I got sober, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, in Buckhead, and a guy offered me a job as a glazier. Told me, if you can get a driver's license, I'll give you a job making $25 an hour. I called my mom, and she said, Eric, if you can get it for under $1,000, I'll help you get your license. Texas said they wanted $8,000 to get my license back. 3 years before I got sober. A year into sobriety, I was a house man, and I was tired of getting off the bus in the rain and having to walk 8 blocks back to the halfway house. I was working for the VA now. I was sponsoring guys. Every Sunday I was on the bus for 3 or 4 hours going back to the Salvation Army and helping guys there. I was asking for rides out to my home group in Lutz. It was tough, but I was vigilant about my recovery. I wrote to the state of Texas and I said, can you make me out a payment plan for this $8,000? 6 weeks later, I got a letter back and they had released my license for free. $25 and I got my Florida State driver's license. I've had 6 cars in recovery. I've had a driver's license, insurance, all the way through it. Gave 1 car away. I just got financed for a car. First one in recovery. You couldn't trust me in your home when I was using. You'd have to strip search me because walking in, I was taking inventory. I've had 2 fiancés in recovery. Both trust me full-heartedly to teach and instill my values in their kids. I have friends today that don't want me to be their friend just because of what they can get from me. And I have friends today that I don't want them for what I can get off of them. I have a sponsor today that I look up to as a human being, and he's probably one of my closest friends who taught me early on that he wasn't my higher power. And it's awesome. But the biggest thing that this, the 2 biggest things that this program gave me was, one, a connection to my God that answers all my problems, which was that promise I gave you in the beginning. And it gave me the peace of mind that I don't ever have to drink again. That when I get in the car tonight and I drive home to an apartment complex, that there's guys that are selling dope right outside my house, that I don't have to step outside and get something to make me fill that hole. It's already filled. I have more than enough grace in my life to fill a lifetime. God has given me a total second chance at life, and I'm 44 years old.
book promises is that when these things are done, our most fulfilling years lie ahead of us. And I had an awesome life before I got sober. And every year progressively gets better, no matter the diversity that I go through during that year. I've been through some pretty tough times in this program. Early on, I was diagnosed with Hep C. I'm cured today. I lost a girlfriend in this program. It tore me up. God replaced her with a girl that I truly love and will marry. I lost my best friend. Four-legged friend. I was put to sleep. Inadvertently tore me up. My best friend committed suicide July 4th, 2012. But I have a multitude of friends. I've lost three sponsees, but I've got to watch a whole bunch more recover. And like Toby said, this group started in my home. And I've seen it grow from 8, 2 dogs, my fiance and 2 kids at the time, to members as high as 125, to where it's settled now at between 50 and 60. And I've seen guys start to see sustained sobriety and get their lives back. I'm going to end it because I'm 1 minute over now. I can go on all night. I'm passionate about this program because it gave me my life back. And a vision for you. First full paragraph, it says, still you may say, but I will not have the benefit of contact with you who write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is upon Him. We will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize that we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him daily in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Freely give. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless and keep you until then. Thank you.
Eric M., 164 Group.